This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It has been buried for thousands of years. A mystery. A secret. A threshold to the future.
Where'd you find this? I've never seen anything like this.
One man will break the code and open the door.
Well, this should read Stargate. That was in front of us the whole time.
The other will lead the way.
Why are you here?
I'm here in case you succeed.
Jackson's identified the seventh symbol.
Backup storage, reserve power, on.
What is that?
It's your Stargate.
We've opened a doorway to a world we know nothing about.
The beam has locked itself onto a point somewhere in the Kalium galaxy.
It's on the other side of the known universe.
Your turn now.
They prepared for danger.
Begin final evacuation.
They expected the unknown.
Stabilizing system.
Initiated commencement sequence.
But they could never have imagined this.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Rewatchability. I'm J.M. McNabb, joined as always by...
Robert LaRonde.
And we're joined by a special guest this week. It's our friend Sina Ramani. Hey, Sina.
Hello, folks. It's nice to be back.
The welcome. Host and editor, curator of The East is a Podcast, which you can find on, however you listen to this. I don't know. That's your business. We've got a special episode for you this week. Mm-hmm. We are going to be talking about the 1994 science fiction blockbuster, Stargate, directed by Roland Emmerich, starring James Spader and Kurt Russell for some reason.
Yep. Kurt Russell for some reason...
Well, no, I love Kurt Russell, but like I can't imagine like a Hollywood executive being like, we got to find a project for Kurt Russell and James Spader. They got to get those two together. And if a cast member from The Crying Game is around too, that would be the icing on the cake. Before we get into that big, big movie, exciting to talk about, I do want to thank all of the Patreon donors. You can go to patreon.com/rewatchability and kick in a few bucks. Help us keep the show going. You get the show early and ad free. And we sure do appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get into Stargate because there's so much to talk about with this movie. Let's start with you, Rob. Do you remember when you first saw this?
Okay, so I have to confess that I didn't see the film Stargate. But hold on. Jam, hold on.
Okay.
I read the novel.
No.
Yes, I did. By the authors, Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin.
Oh, God.
And I remember it to be, pretty good.
Why?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think it's one of those things that like...
Was it in hieroglyphics or was it in English? Was it on an ancient tablet?
It was a little bit of both. And then in the middle, it had glossy pages with photos of the cast.
Right. There's always like 8 photos in the middle.
Yeah, James Spader and, you know... You know, I don't know where I got it. I was trying to remember. I think maybe like my mom picked it up at like... the secondhand store at the Salvation Army or something like that and was like, you know, Rob likes science-y, fiction-y things. You know, right. Or, you know, maybe she thought it was like a weird, like, Salvation Army religious thing. And, you know, it was supposed to, like, I don't know, be good for my soul or something. I don't know.
Right. So you read it. Did you have no interest in seeing the movie? Did you know the movie existed?
Oh, I knew the movie existed. You know, yeah, I didn't need to see the movie. It never really occurred to me to see the movie after reading the book. Like, I got the whole story from that, you know, like O'Neill has his thing and then Daniel, he stays on the planet, and that's what you need to know about the Stargate. So okay. Yeah, I just, you know,
so you liked it.
It was, you know, it was okay. It was right. You know, it was no Stephen King or, you know, The Wheel of Time, but you know, it was okay.
Okay, and Sina, when did you first read Stargate? I mean, see Stargate.
I want to admit something, which is I have never seen this movie before until roughly 48 hours ago or 24
what, really?
Hours
I figured,
ago.
When, I thought we when... talked about this before.
I've seen like parts of the shows and
oh, okay.
And we can get into it, but it always struck me as extremely dumb. Mm-hmm. And I was right. I was right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very stupid movie. It's very
well,
stupid.
Yeah, I think like that's one of the reasons I didn't want to see it either, because the whole like space pharaoh thing seemed dumb, you know?
Okay, well, you guys sit back and relax, because I will tell you about how I saw this movie in the theater when it first came out at the Yorkdale cinema, and I liked it.
Okay.
But I liked it, but I never saw it again. Like, it was one of those things where, like, me and my friends went, we all had a great time, I think we all enjoyed it, but it, like, it never caught on. Like, I never saw it a second time until this year, until just now. And I even bought an action figure for this movie.
Wow.
Which I instantly regretted. Like, I think I got... Like,
did
I remember
you get the French Stewart action figure?
Yeah.
Or the Richard Kind?
No, it was like one of the, like, villain's henchmen. Like, which I think just looked cool. But I bought it because I thought it looked cool, and I was advertised it on shows I liked, and I was dumb and impressionable, so I bought it, and then I instantly regretted it, and was like, what am I going to do with this? I'm not going to buy another Stargate figure. Like, I guess this guy will just have to interface with my Ninja Turtles. Yeah.
Get the Robin Hood Prince of Thieves action figures in right. there.
Which I still have. I found some at my parents' house not long ago.
Do you have Rickman?
Why did you buy those?
I liked that movie when I was a kid. And they were good action figures. They were admittedly cobbled together from a lot of pre-existing toy lines. Like, a lot of, like, everywhere Robin Hood lives or any of his, like, vehicles are all from Ewok sets that were just lying around and, like, repainted or remolded. I don't know why we're talking about this, but Stargate, yeah, it was like one of those things where it was like, it kind of like fooled me and my friends into thinking it was like a big iconic movie, but then like the illusion very quickly wore off and we realized that it was not a good movie, but
it's very dumb, but it's made for kids though. It's obviously made for kids and like a certain kind of brainless movie going
sure.
experience,
which is that
people who know the truth about ancient aliens. Do.
Right.
which is what Roland
yeah,
Emmerich
exactly.
does. Like this is his signature. Like he makes stupid movies for stupid
right.
times. Like that's it. That's his, and he's good at it. Is he?
Well,
he
I mean, does I make think he is. It. Like Independence Day. Like if that's like your big example of the big stupid movie for the big stupid time. Like it was sort of the perfect yeah. movie. You know.
He makes movies
yeah,
that
was definitely more fun than this movie.
When we were kids, like the movies he made were like perfect, like event. Like I remember all the times I saw his movies in the theater. I remember them being packed and you know exciting to see. But you know he doesn't necessarily make movies that last.
No.
But let's get into it because there's so much to talk about. Rob, do you want to do the rundown for Stargate?
I sure do. So, it starts in ancient Egypt, and, you know, there's some ancient Egyptian people hanging out, and they see this light in the sky, and there's all this like sand that's being blown everywhere because it's the desert. And then they look up, and there's a big old triangle descending from heaven. And it sort of comes down like E.T.'s ship. It's not actually too dissimilar from E.T.'s ship.
Wait, does that? I don't remember that happening.
What? Oh, well.
Did you not watch the extended cut?
No.
Oh, J.M.
oh, you missed out, my friend.
I watched the version that was free on Hoopla.
Well, you missed this whole part, which I think is now that I'm thinking about it, is totally integral to the movie.
Right,
But, okay, so yeah, that happens, and then it cuts to ancient Egypt, but not that ancient. We're talking like 1928 ancient, like, you know, like your great-grandpa ancient, you know? And they are doing an excavation, and there's like a whole bunch of Egyptian people, and then there's like some British people who are in charge, and they brush off some stuff, and they see something. And it looks kind of like, you know, a relief carving, but they're like, is it a fossil? And that's all we get. Oh, and there's also a little girl, of course, with a piece of jewelry, of course. Is this before Titanic or after?
What the? This is that era. Oh, no, this might be right before.
Yeah, it's a few years before.
James Cameron owes somebody some money. Kind of.
Well, yeah, I guess when she's an old lady and she has the jewelry.
Then. Old ladies, jewelries, I think that counts. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so that's all that happens sort of back then. Cut to the present. We have this guy, his name is Daniel Jackson. He's an Egyptologist, and he is giving this lecture about how the pharaohs couldn't have built the pyramids. And everybody is listening to this lecture all incredulous because everybody knows that, you know, they were just built, right? And everybody's asking him, okay, well, who built the pyramids then, smarty pants? And he doesn't seem to know. So it's it's embarrassing. And he's got, this is James Spader, he's got long floppy hair going like all over his face, and he's got these like glasses, and he's like, he seems like he's just not meant for this world, you know?
Like, he looks like he should be recording Rubber Soul. He doesn't look like he should be lecturing about Egypt.
He looks like he should be recording a podcast, excuse me.
Yeah.
It's very young. Yeah, he's baby James Spader. It's he's honestly just seeing his young face because we're so used to him looking old, at least I am. Like, he just, and so to see him so young, and he looks really young. Like, he's, like, academics don't come, like, they take a while to make academics. Like, you have to study for a long time. So you're in your 30s.
Well,
yeah, you got to sit on that.
He is a fraud. He is, like, widely dismissed.
Yeah. It was also weird to see him not playing an outward psychopath. It's, like, tricky. Like, sometimes a psychopath slips in there, you know? You get it, you know? Like, he doesn't seem to associate with people very well, at least not, like, Earth people. But it's strange to see him, you know, being, like, this guy who's supposed to be kind of timid. But also, we have Kurt Russell. And when we open on him, he is just sitting in this child's bedroom with his baby blues all just almost glistening. And he's holding a gun because he is, seems like he's about to do something desperate. And then somebody knocks on his door and it's the army and they tell him that they're reactivating him.
Yeah, they're like, you look like you're in good shape to come back to active service.
Oh, just sitting here
totally
for lonely.
Unnecessary plot point. Just absolutely unnecessary plot point that his like son is dead for whatever reason.
Well, his son. I thought it was funny that like the army guys come in and he's in his son's room and he tucks the gun under the pillow, and then they leave and they're like, "What happened to that guy?" And the other one says, "His son accidentally shot himself." Well, no wonder he kept his gun under the pillow. It's not a good place for it.
Yeah.
They try to pay that off later, and it doesn't really work.
Yeah.
You can tell that this extended cut that I watched, I was like, wow, they're finding every scrap piece of footage to sell another DVD.
Well, no, I think that's in the regular cut, too. If I think I know what you're alluding to. But also, I do want to say that Kurt Russell, like, looks way cooler in this scene.
Yeah.
Like, he's got, like, the stubble and, like, kind of shaggy hair, and he looks he looks like Snake Plissken. Mm-hmm. And then they completely ruin his hair.
Oh, yeah. They, like, I mean, they make it, like, a perfect square. It is, like, I mean, it's almost like Guile from Street Fighter. Yeah. It's so angular.
That's what I thought.
It's very, like, everything Emmerich does, it's very cliche. Like, everything is carved out in front of you. So, like, Will Smith is the, like, fast-talking, like, you know, black guy. That's, like, one character star of, like, of a Roland Emmerich film. And then Kurt Russell is, like, the dejected military man. Like, it's all just collection of stock characters. I mean, that's fine. I mean, on principle, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just, it's so funny to see them all collected in Roland Emmerich's movies. And it keeps happening. 2012 is the same way. Like, it's all just kind of familiar people that are sort of roped together.
Yeah.
In
well,
a
I mean,
plot.
That's also, I mean, that's such like a trope of these action movies sort of at the time, like, you know, the Armageddons and the Rocks. And also, like, this movie has like a whole lot of other movies, like, I mean, maybe I'm just thinking about it because Kurt Russell's in it. It kind of feels like The Thing and Alien as well. Just they happen to go to, you know, space Egypt instead of, you know, being stuck in the thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, so basically they've gathered all these people at this military base because they have this thing, they don't know what it is. I mean, we don't know what it is at first, but it has all these symbols on it. And they need Daniel to translate these symbols because he's the most translatingist Egyptologist in the land. And so, you know, he goes in there, and Richard Kind is the guy who has been working on the thing so far. And man, talk about people looking young. It's weird to see him, you know, looking like
looking exactly the same as he does now.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does not age whatsoever.
He's like I will Paul say, Rudd, but you know, just already started up here.
I will say, like, I think my opinion of this movie would be way different if they just had it, if they just cut out the James Spader character and had this be an expedition led by Richard Kind. Yeah. Had everything happen the same, but it's Richard Kind.
It would be pretty hilarious. Yeah.
Buried.
Excuse me. What are you doing?
It's not a coffin. For all time. Who the hell translated this?
I did.
Well, this should read, a million years into the sky is Ra, sun god, sealed and buried for all time. This left door to heaven is... Stargate.
Oh, yeah. I also forgot to mention that the general is one of the guys from Deadwood. I don't know if you...
oh, really?
Yeah. I can't remember his name, but he's great. His voice is great. But so instantly, Daniel is able to solve this thing that has been puzzling the scientists for years, presumably since 1928. And then instantly, they're just like, rever up, let's go.
Moments later. Well, also, okay, this whole thing is funny to me because they get him to translate the thing and he doesn't know about the Stargate. They literally, like, he's giving a presentation on like a whiteboard and they're like, we better show him. And the whiteboard he was using retracts and was like a secret passage. But the dumbest part about that is like the whole thing that they were using him to get to is they couldn't like figure out what the like last symbol to like activate the Stargate was, like what the last hieroglyphic should be. They'd figured out all the others, like they'd basically almost gotten there, but they couldn't. Well, first of all, it's dumb for so many reasons. One reason it's dumb is because it's literally just a pyramid, but one of them has a pyramid and two people on it and the other doesn't. I think am I wrong?
I think so.
Like, he was just like, hey, these two pyramids are the same. And they're like, oh, my God.
He's got it. This man.
But then also on top of that, like, it was just one symbol they were missing. Like, and there, I don't know how many there are on there, but if they had the sequence of all the others, couldn't they just spend like an hour and try it with each one.
You know, sometimes you just need a second set of eyes, you know?
No, but they don't need it. Like, if you had, like, a password and you knew that the last number was, like, between 1 and 7, you say, well, let's try it up to 1. Let's try it up to 2. Let's try it up to 3. Let's try it up to 4. You would just, like, you would be able to figure that out in an afternoon. Like, you don't need that guy.
Okay, Mr. Science. Go back to Harvard.
Yeah, you're pushing too hard, JM. You're going to break the movie.
No, only Daniel is special enough to do this because he's the person who has the inner truth. So they send a probe, first of all, into this Stargate, and it doesn't come back. And then there's this whole thing about how, like, oh, they don't want to send a reconnaissance team because they won't be able to get back. Because I guess you need a Stargate on the other side, and it's going to have all these different symbols. So Kurt Russell doesn't even, you know, he says it's totally off the table. But Daniel sort of convinces him that he'll be able to figure it out once he's there.
He's like, I can do it. And they're like, well, he has been here for a day or two.
If.
Let's let him do it.
I don't even think that they've had lunch yet.
Like, they have the entire, like, they have the entire resources of the U.S. government, military, like, literally the strongest empire that has ever existed, hundreds of millions of people, and like, 25-year-old James Spader is the key to their whole thing.
And he's just, like, a conspiracy theorist. It would be like, yeah, it would be like if the American government just sent, like, a YouTuber... So, like, who has all these, like, an anti-vaxxer.
Well, a couple of years ago, actually, that would have been right in keeping with the way things were going.
I will say that, like, when it came out, I was very impressed by, like, the actual effects of the Stargate itself.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of, like, ripple water effects, I remember being really cool at the time.
It's pretty neat. I mean, I have to say, I like the idea of the Stargate. And I even was a little bit on board for the sort of journey of discovery, even though it was happening remarkably fast, that, you know, they sort of take you on, like, here's the Stargate, now we're going through, and now, like, the people are going to go through. It's, like, it's kind of exciting.
Yeah.
But once they get there, it gets, like, really dumb. I mean, even dumber.
Yeah, so they all go through. They send one scientist, they send one Egyptologist, and then, like, 18 military guys, including another, like, we talked about Billy Crystal last week on the show. We get another prime example of the 90s alpha male, French Stewart.
Yep.
Yeah, what was he doing in this movie? it's so stupid this whole movie.
I think of how he got cast, and, like, yeah, maybe he's been, like, typecast since, maybe he could play more things when he was younger, but
Roland Emmerich also has weird casting policies, like Harry Connick Jr. is in Independence Day. like it makes no sense.
All makes a lot of sense. He's a handsome man.
Okay, fine. Hollywood is filled with handsome men. They're not Harry Connick Jr.
He's a crooner.
weird.
So yeah, they go through the thing. I can't remember the name.
Stargate.
It's the name of the
movie. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention the movie
and 47 TV shows.
The name's very important because, you know, it's a big part of the translation that Richard Kind gets wrong, because he says in the thing he has it translated as, like, the door to heaven, but it's the Stargate. Like, door to heaven would really, I mean, never mind, I fucked up the joke. I was gonna make a joke about knocking on heaven's door. It doesn't work the same if it's knocking on the Stargate, right?
That's right. Oh, if they had, like, paid the big bucks to get Bob Dylan to record a Stargate-centric version of that song.
Well, we know through Battlestar Galactica that Bob Dylan's music is linked to the cosmological sphere.
Oh, that's true.
Or basically, he, like, rips off the universe. One of those.
So one of the first things they see when they're there, they basically go and it's just another pyramid and another desert.
Mm.
So it's, I mean, yeah, it's very similar to Earth. But James Spader sees, like, an alien horse creature.
Mm-hmm.
And offers it candy. And that's the point where I realized that this is just, like, 8 Steven Spielberg movies crammed into one movie. Like, he's giving an alien candy like E.T. Mm. I mean, the scene where James Spader's going through the Stargate plays just like the end of Close Encounters. We've got the deserts from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Okay. We've got, you know, it's kind of a Temple of Doom thing with them trying to, like, save these people. It's just Spielberg movies worse and shoved into one tiny movie.
Well, I think you're half right in the sense that, like, yeah, Steven Spielberg picks up on these things, but, like, they're the sort of deeper, I would say, sort of cultural genetics that this thing is kind of pulling from, or like inside this movie, is this is about a colonial encounter, right? Like, this is staging the colonial encounter. And lots of fiction, I mean, a lot of it is 19th century, but like, think
Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Edgar Rice Burroughs, yeah. Like John Carter, like, all, like, this was high, like, 19th century, like, late, especially sort of the second half. I mean, Egyptology is interesting because it's really an early 19th century thing. It's like 1800, 1799 or something. That's usually when people put the beginning of the sort of modern history of Egypt is the Napoleonic invasions, which has its own fucked up way of thinking about the world. But this business of this movie is part of a long continuum of movies that use a sort of whatever, like they use some like whatever stupid plot device. In this case, it's the Stargate, to just return to some sort of like profoundly sort of ground zero of culture, which is the first encounter between the self and the native, right? Or like the representation of our culture that produced this movie, text, whatever, and the people who are helping us author it, in the sense, right? And so, like, that to me was the most shocking. I was like, that's what this movie's about? Real, like, that's what, like, all these years, that's what I've been watching, is like, because I've seen the show. I mean, I haven't seen the show, but like, I've seen the show referenced. Then it's kind of become like, it's even for like sci-fi nerds like us, like, it's kind of like a joke. Like,
whoa,
it's kind of like, oh god, how many Stargate
going
shows
into dangerous
are there?
Territory.
Like, I mean, yeah, sorry. I know. Sorry, Stargate fans.
Well,
I'm sure it's
people
great,
do like the show.
My brother was a big fan
like
of the show,
anything,
actually.
Yeah.
I do want to put it out there that I don't think any of us have ever seen any of the show. So
I've seen a few episodes. It's okay.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, like, they have MacGyver instead of Snake Plissken. So it's like.
Yeah. And that ran for like 10 years. That ran from like 97.
Yeah,
to
and then there's like
that
multiple
show.
Spinoffs. Yeah.
Yeah, so for whatever reason, this movie taps into like a deep, like a profound sort of wellspring of sort of sentiments and problems and representations. And also like other sort of canonical sci-fi things do this too, right? Like
not Star Trek, like, though.
I mean, yeah, especially Star Trek, whatever, Star Wars. Like the encounter with the native is really important scene. And like that is, like, think of like C-3PO in Jedi, right? He convinces them that they're a god.
Oh, no.
Right? Like
well,
that's
yeah.
So when that happens here, it's bad?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is a something that like Conrad says in Heart of Darkness is that like, or Kurtz's character actually through Kurtz, he says we must get them to treat us like gods. We must make them think of us as gods because of our godlike technology, and that's why you have like that scene with Snake Plissken, Kurt Russell. He's like playing with the lighter and stuff. It's like look at this technology. They explain it away. They kind of bluff it away, the whole allegory of the colonial encounter, by saying that, like, we haven't gotten to this plot point, but it turns out that the reason why this ancient civilization exists on this alien planet is that they were forcibly brought over through the Stargate to, as a labor.
Okay, I didn't understand that. Maybe that was in the director's cut. But no, I honestly, like, that was what I wanted to ask you guys, is who are these people? Are these people are from Earth and brought here, or these are aliens?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. They're from Earth. They were brought there by an alien.
Well, who are the aliens then?
Who use them? That's the thing.
It's just this guy.
It's just one guy.
It's just this guy who then he did the thing. He did the thing that, this is the crazy thing. They project like onto this Sun Ra or whatever Ra, they project onto him like the policies of like European Empire, which was make them think we're gods and make them do, and they'll do what we tell them to do, and we'll use them as a cheap labor force and whatever, right? Like, and so it's a weird projection of of almost entirely white. Like everyone in that like Colorado room, whatever, is like entirely white. Like there's not even a pretext.
Where are the Egyptian Egyptologists at?
I mean, like, whatever. I mean, Egyptology is like a white discipline, whatever, fine. But like that is, I mean, of course, there's like modern, there's people in Egypt who actually do it, and they have been doing it for millennia, but that didn't matter to Europeans. But like this business of the colonial encounter is so powerful, and it's so troubling. I mean, not troubling, but like, think about it. This is 1994. American soldiers are all over the Middle East. They're all over like Saudi Arabia. They're in northern Iraq. They set up that autonomy, that no-fly zone.
Yeah, and this movie has that whole like liberation narrative.
Yeah, at the end, it turns out to be a weirdly, you know, it's covered up as, oh, you're oppressive foreign lead, like this you're oppressive leader of these uncivilized people. He's mistreated them or she or whatever. And we're going to arm these dispossessed people to fight back and whatever, right? So it turns into this weird, you know, And it's no accident that Lawrence of Arabia sort of wannabe music is playing across the whole movie. Like that music, because that's what T.E. Lawrence was. T.E. Lawrence was a low-level or mid-level British agent sent by the British Crown to help organize the revolt of the Arab tribes against the lingering power of the Ottoman Empire. Right? So like T.E. Lawrence is that sort of like a minor figure in that, who was blown up to this hugely important figure because of the fucking movie and because of the weird culture.
I think you've hit it on the head. I think that's the movie that's like Spielberg's favorite movie. That and The Searchers,
yes, exactly.
Right? So that becomes like him and his school's, you know, that influences all of his movies. And then it's like Broken Telephone that gets, you know, knocked down a peg. And everyone tries to copy that. And then, like you said, there's everything that was happening in the world at the time in the early 90s.
Yeah.
But I was genuinely confused because, they treat these people like they're not like, oh, my God, there's fellow earthlings here. They treat them like a fucking alien race. That's why I was confused. Yeah. It's weird.
Stay back, they have fangs.
But that's Empire. I mean, but that's Empire, right? Is that like the alienness, foreignness? Mm-hmm. Like these are, that's why Arrival is a really good movie. Like Arrival is mostly about a translator. And it's just mostly, like, and it's like the weird things that translation requires. Whereas all of the sort of linguistic elements from this are all just like cover up for, you know, the sort of action, the dumb action movie that this movie is, right? Like it's all just kind of all the Egypt stuff and the science stuff. It's just pretext to get to the explosions and the whatever, right? So like it's interesting that so much fodder, like cultural fodder, has been made of this over the decades, that like this really dumb concept has just been manufactured to all that, and very uncreative, whatever. Like it's not, you know, has just been turned into and like respun for so much. I mean Roland Emmerich sits on like a pile of gold coins because of these movies, because like people just eat all this stuff up. Now it's interesting, Carolco, this was a Carolco movie, right? How do you say that? Carolco? I don't know how to say it. The same people who did Total Recall and I think some of the Rambo movies, right, or something. Like big swinging dick movies, if I can describe it that way. Like, and so it's interesting that this is one of their later ones. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I do want to get into like that first encounter, because they go to this like community. Mm-hmm. Again, it's just so localized. Like if these people were, again, I'm so confused by what actually happened. These people were like kidnapped in the days of ancient Egypt.
Yeah.
Is that right? And have just been like kind of kept in this stasis of ancient Egypt. But they also like aren't that many of them. Like, like why isn't it, why is the whole planet not like full of people? Like why is it just this one tiny village? But in any case, they all like, they welcome them back. It's basically like the Ewok C-3PO thing, because they think James Spader is a god, because
they offer him a woman, which he, you know, is good enough to.
What the fuck was that?
Yeah. All that. That's all. That's every cliche of these colonial encounter narratives. Like, it's always the elder tribesman offering.
And then they're like, no, I won't. No. But then later, like, they're like, yeah.
This is this. But, yeah. And there's like.
Now I've earned it.
Yeah, it's so fucked up, man.
No. You don't have to do that. Please. Maybe you should go. Okay? It's okay. Maybe you should go. No, it's okay. It's all right. Well, here. Oh, yeah, let me grab this.
Timon, not one of you, Nafaria. Are you back, Harim?
Yeah, I'm here.
Miratutu.
No. It's me. I want to thank you. I'm very happy.
This is the crazy thing. I mean, I was thinking this. Like, there are, like, 9 years later, the U.S. invades Iraq illegally, begins a process that would take the lives and kill over 1 million Iraqis. Like, there are men who go to Iraq who kill Iraqis who grew up loving this movie. Like that's the reality of American Orientalism. It's not just some abstract thing. Like, it's not just like, you know, people like us with too much time on their hands talking about it for a podcast. Like, it really is like you prepare the mental landscape for the conquest that your politicians and your military leaders will lead and you're going to be a part of. And it helps us, convinces us of the justness of our work. Right, is that like? I mean, I'm not saying that like there's you can draw a direct line between Stargate and the invasion of Iraq, but it's that the people who consume these kinds of texts, this is where it trains them that dehumanization level. Like as you said, it like they treat them like these alien creatures, and they're like not humans, right? Because that's what like the line between alien and human is very flimsy, especially after 500 years of like white supremacist like European rule, right? So like it's easy, and like those scenes where like Kurt Russell is talking to them and they're like dogs basically, like he like puts their hands over and they start copying him like babies, like it's really like this is profoundly racist.
It was staggeringly racist.
Is there something worse than staggeringly?
Oh my god,
I would like to use that one.
It was kind of shocking. I was trying to look up to see if there was any like backlash at the time, and I couldn't find anything. Because even like, when did True Lies come out? Because that like there were, yeah, it was around the same time,
and
like
there
were protests. So there were articles, right? No, but this like this was crazy.
No, but that's true. No, you're right, Rob. You're right, because you can.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like you can turn those racist sort of colonial encounter narratives into allegories, science fiction allegories, very easily. And that's John Carter. Mm-hmm. That's like the OG text of this whole genre is John Carter.
Sex.
What's funny is that John Carter, the movie, so many years later, just implodes. It doesn't have anything. Whereas this movie, which is extremely dumb, John Carter, like this is or like what was it called,
Princess of Mars,
Man on Mars, or something, Princess of Mars, and like this is extremely dumber version of that. I mean, I didn't see the John Carter movie, I read the novel, but it's like I'm not a guy who's like precious about this stuff. Like I don't like I you know, JM knows me for a long time, and Rob, you know me too, actually, for a while too. So like I come on these shows and I talk about like representation and stuff, but like this movie is for a mass audience. It's designed to be watched by millions of people. It's not some art house thing. It's not Six Degrees of Separation, right? Like this is a mass text. And as such, and especially because of the child aspect to this and like the blockbuster aspect, when this movie comes out, 1994, a kind of important moment in Hollywood history, it's kind of, I mean, this is Hollywood at its height, kind of, right? Like 1999, supposedly the greatest year in Hollywood filmmaking, is like 5 years around the corner. But like in terms financially, sort of materially, American culture industry is never going to be as strong as this decade. And the fact that like this movie is such a hit and it produces immense amount of culture afterwards is, I mean, to me, such an indictment of everything that we grew up with. It's like, what? Like, this movie? Like, because it insults your intelligence on top of being racist, too. Like, it's not...
It definitely
like,
insults your intelligence.
Culture makers don't think much of us. And you watch this movie.
Yeah. I mean, I was like...
Oh, God.
I was prepared, because, Cena, I knew that we were having you on this podcast. I knew that we would bring up colonialism somewhere. I knew that it was going to be somewhere in this movie, right? And so I was like, okay, there's some like Egyptian aesthetic. That's like, it's a little bit iffy. But then when they got to the village and they started like worshiping like gods, it was like, oh man, that's just like, oof.
Yeah. And giving them like a candy bar
the girl,
and like... And the,
yeah, so yeah. This girl, the elder's daughter, is offered to Daniel, and he's too good to take her because he's not like that, not like those like ruffians in the Marines, yeah. But
not like French Stewart over there.
No. But rather, he shows her that he has a unique soul, and they have like this whole big thing. And then, of course, they're destined to be together anyway. And I think later people think that they're married anyway because he wasn't supposed to say no to her. So it's weird. And and troubling. And also, while they're there, Kurt Russell also bonds with the boy that is that girl's brother because obviously, he is a little bit, broken up still about his son. And so he has like a little bit of a connection,
Yeah. Well, he gives them first this connection manifests as him giving him cigarettes and a lighter. And then, he reaches for the gun and then he yells at him. And that's like the last time that sort of character backstory comes into play. Like there's, but it's also that kid that he freaked out about touching his gun in the tent. Is also like the same kid that they just give a gun to at the end.
Yeah.
So his arc is basically like learning that sometimes you should give children guns. Like maybe just train them. I don't know.
Brought to you by the NRA.
Yeah.
Keep it. It's yours.
Yay.
No! Dangerous!
Yeah. These are moderate rebels, ancient Ipshin moderate rebels, basically.
But let's talk about Ra for a minute, because this was also confusing. And this is also notable for the character being played by Jay Davidson, mm-hmm. who was only in one other major release, which was The Crying Game, for which he was Oscar nominated.
Mm-hmm.
So this was kind of like a big deal.
Passed over for this one.
But he,
one of the less discussed Oscar snubs.
I mean, I've got more to talk about him and how he got involved with this movie in the trivia section of the show, but it is weird to see him. But like, I certainly hadn't seen The Crying Game when I saw this movie as a kid, but having seen it now, it's funny. It's a bold choice. Like I did read that originally they were supposed to be just like an old guy,
right,
as the villain. And instead they were like, somehow it came up probably just because they wanted to capitalize on, on the buzz and success of that performance that they ended up getting Jay Davidson. But it's weird. It's mm-hmm. real weird. It's confusing. I mean, there were some rewrites with the character. I guess we'll just mention it now. But like originally, it wasn't supposed to be Ra or an alien. It was supposed to be just another human who was like being controlled by the alien. And that wasn't going well at test screening. So they were like, fuck it, let's make that character an alien. So they just like made his eyes glow and like did something to his voice. So it's also like a confusing part of the story.
That corny vocoder thing, like that's something we watched in like, there was this like, do you guys remember this? We used to watch this in like school. It was called Zardip Search for Health and Wellness. It was like this weird Canadian like show for kids that they made. And they had like the same cheap kind of vocoder voice for like the alien, and I was like, this is a multiple million dollar movie and you have like like you have audacity levels of sound editing skills, like at your like, and the the CGI of this movie does not hold up. My God, that's worse than like Tomb Raider 1.
It's a bit
like
a bit iffy.
Yeah, it does not look good. And those early scenes, like apparently those were shot in Arizona, the 1920s scenes. Those were like shot in Arizona. And you can totally tell that it's like, you know, just a cheap, like, why do Roland Emmerich's movies are like this? They're expensive, but they look incredibly cheap and dumb. Mm. Like, they look like, I mean, they are dumb, but they look cheap. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I mean, Godzilla was kind of like that. I mean, I guess Godzilla was like in a big city, but like, I don't know. Roland Emmerich got some fucking issues.
But the thing I found sort of interesting about the Jay Davison character is that, like, they chose to make this character, I mean, he's obviously like a sort of effeminate, plays it very effeminately. There's bits where, you know, he interacts with other characters in ways that might be homoerotic, and that made me think about like the movie 300, where the Persians are also sort of like painted as these, like, you know, really effeminate sort of things. And and I think like that's a thing that has been written about, like, you know, the sort of like othering of other cultures as, like, you know, problematically gay, and also, like, you know, yeah, putting, you know, making gay people seem like a threat, you know.
Well, it's an old Disney, you know, trick.
Well, yeah, that too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's the thing. The foreignness is such a useful category that you can do so much with it. So, like, foreignness can be skin color. Foreignness can be, I mean, the language that these people supposedly speak, like that main guy, I can't remember his name. No, not the main, like the main villager guy, like, yeah, the head of the village. Like, he's just using like dumb words, like it's fake language, like you, like it's just,
right. Yep.
You know what I mean? It's just like this insulting, yeah, like it's this insulting, low intelligence kind of form of communication. I mean, one thing they can hide behind that is like, well, this evil alien kept these people underdeveloped. So they're anachronistic. They exist outside of time. And so that's why they're like undeveloped and they don't read. Now, this is another important colonial, extremely common colonial kind of talking point, which is we will bring the light of education to these dark spaces of the earth. And the whole thing of teaching literacy and the idea of what literacy offers in terms of opening the mind, as if like only after like literacy is given to them do they think about their identity, right? Which is like bullshit. Like, you don't need to be literate to like have an identity to understand that you're being exploited and used as slave labor. Like, even if African-American slaves weren't, like, enslaved people weren't like literate, they still knew what they were in society, and they still knew that it was like wrong and unfair. Like, you don't, like, and they still revolted too. So like this whole thing of turning them into modern subjects, bringing them the light of modernity, and then ally with them to overthrow their unjust god, fake god, right? Like, that is, I mean, this is just, you know, gourmet imperial culture.
Yeah.
That, you know, colonial culture, like a 19th century variety. I mean, it really, this guy, Roland Emmerich, really loves this stuff. He really like, you know, I mean, this is a debate that Jam and I had over King Kong, Peter Jackson's King Kong long ago, about like the viscerality of that movie and how like there is like blackness is rendered as like disgusting and alien and gross. Whereas the innocence of, what is it, Naomi
Watts?
Yeah, Naomi Watts. Like, is it her?
That movie is especially bad. Yeah. But
yeah, like the innocence of like, but like that. Those are colonial encounter movies too, right? For like sure. That's another famous one of locating your own sense of self and using the foreigner sort of alterity or otherness to sort of anchor that. I mean, that is all over.
Yeah, the Peter Jackson one, like, basically took like what was in the original King Kong and somehow made it worse in like the 2000s.
Like, he's like, can you make it more racist and look nicer and longer too? Like, and longer.
It must be longer.
Well,
I mean, that's the thing. Like when you render like questions of race and culture and identity and like, you know, history and like the imbalance of power between North and South, right? Like when you allegorize that into movies like King Kong or this movie or whatever, like you can say things that you couldn't say otherwise. And that's why you use those sort of plot. That's why you use those right. plots, because you can represent it, but you can't like, I mean, I guess you can, I mean, you can't like do that same sort of colonial fantasy today, but you can certainly cover it up with like, oh, aliens and whatever. And actually one of the things about this movie is that like the premise of this movie is actually confirming one of these kind of racist
right.
online sort of fetish points, which is, oh, the Egyptians couldn't have built those pyramids. It's way too advanced for those dumb fucking people. So clearly aliens had to do it,
yeah.
right? Which is like, it's so impossible. And this is something that people say about like indigenous architecture here or across the world, right? Like this is something that modern people have invented, projecting contemporary racist attitudes about the world onto the distant past so that we can justify ourselves in collecting that past. I mean, for God's sakes, the Stargate is in Colorado. How did they get to Colorado from Egypt? like that scene. Oh, we haven't talked about that open scene or the second opening scene of 1920s Egypt, right? At like that was one of the high points of Egyptology was that time. But that's really in the direct aftermath of the British and French conquest of the former of the lands that used to belong to the Ottoman Empire. Like that's like they're about to make, like they've created the modern countries that we know today, or more or less, like they laid the groundwork, right? Like they have their mandate in Palestine, in Syria, Lebanon is carved out. Like all these, this is when it's happening. It begins in this time, and so the fact that they go to this period, extract, you know, this Stargate thing, take it to Colorado where they can experiment on it, and it takes them 70 years. And it's so stupid. The woman who was a child at the dig in 1928 is still working on it like 60 years later.
You gotta get tired of it after that.
You got it. You failed, lady. You failed. If you couldn't figure it out in 60 years and 20-year-old James Spader figured it out, like, you did something wrong with your life. You didn't do something right.
Harsh.
Like, oh, man. So stupid.
I do think, yeah, there's also something about that opening scene which we didn't really talk about. Is like, and I do want to talk more in the trivia section about, like, that, the conspiracy theory that the pyramids were built by aliens and the history of that. I want to talk about that a bit later, but like that idea that like that central idea of like tying Egypt and specifically ancient Egypt to magic was so ingrained yeah. In our childhood entertainment, in movies like this, and you know,
The Mummy,
movies like The Mummy, in movies like even in like yeah. the Indiana Jones movies, and it, you know, it predates that conspiracy theory. Like thinking back to like the you know, like when they first exhumed the King Tut
yeah.
tomb, and it was like and people were, yeah, and people were just dying. Like there yeah, were, you know, germs in there, and people were getting hit by cars, and people were dying of old age, and it was attributed to a curse. And I think there is something about, like, I don't know all the history of it, but I think part of that mythologizing of like ancient Egypt by people at that time, like a certain amount of it has to be like a justification for the fact that you're just breaking in and
right.
stealing dead people.
Stealing?
Like
yeah.
if you make Which it magic is, and like a haunted thing, yeah. it's, you know, it makes it an adventure. But if you look at yeah. it for what it actually is, it's just kind of ghoulish and horrible and indefensible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean there are like statues that stood for like thousands of years in places that are now sitting in Chicago, like London, you know, like Berlin, right? Like they just carted them off. Like they carted them off. Like
I'm sure there are statues here in Toronto that are from
yeah,
Egypt.
Yeah. like the what's it called? The obelisks and stuff. Like they looted this country like a bunch of times over. And I mean, my God, they shot at the Sphinx. Like this is what imperialism is. It's this violent terrorist force that rolls over the world and sucks up anything. And it's so funny how you know, does this, like, is this movie proof that the crimes of those eras are still sort of weighing on us, like, as a culture, that we need to, like, expedite them and sort of expiate them, or what's the word I'm on? Like, not expiate them. We want to exercise them. Like, are,
yeah,
is that,
that's why we get,
like, do these movies exist?
We get a mummy movie every, like, 10 years.
That's the true mummy's curse.
I mean, like, like, there were waves of Egyptomania in Europe in the 19th century and 20th century, like, waves of it. Like, the way that, like, things come in and out of fashion, that was Egyptology. I mean, great, like, I think to this day, you still get taught ancient Egypt in, like, public schools. Like, why? Like, why would we do that? Like, what sense does that make to us? Like, why pick just that one tiny corner of the world of a moment to tell that story? There are incredible civilizations all around the world, but for whatever reason, I mean, I know there's a couple of reasons, but for, like, imperialist colonial reasons, like, historical reasons that are very concrete, we get King Tut, we get that sort of, you know, we get those sort of signifiers of ancient Egypt, right? And you know, I mean, it's nuts. And it's movies like this that continue that legacy. I mean, it's insane that they still make the mummy movies, even though they don't, like, the last one did tank big time.
Oh,
right?
The
most recent
one?
The
Tom Cruise one, yeah.
You guys did an episode on it. You guys ripped it to shreds. I remember it.
I don't think
episode.
We did.
No. No, didn't
you? Well, we talked about the Brendan Fraser one.
No, you did. You talked about the Brendan Fraser one, but it was coming out, I think.
Probably, yeah. I mean, I saw it for work, and yeah, it's horrible. Yeah, we should probably wrap this segment up and move on to the trivia. Do you guys have anything else to say about the plot of the movie? James Spader stays. They beat the bad guy.
They teleport the bomb. There was a bomb, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
They teleported
up in the MRI machine, the vertical MRI machine. Which feels, yeah, gives me the creeps. And but then it blows up the guy, and that's the that's how they do it. Blows up the space pyramid. And that's it.
Stargate.
How do they even do with the sequels? There's sequels of this movie, right? Or is it
just the
TV
shows? You know, they've apparently they've talked about, they envisioned it as a trilogy, and never happened. But it became many other TV shows, some of which we'll discuss right after this break.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
We're back on Rewatchability. We're talking about Stargate with Sina Ramani. We're not big fans of this movie, as you can probably tell.
Well, maybe. Let's leave a little bit of surprise possibility open.
I do have some trivia questions for you guys.
Okay.
Are you
this
ready?
Isn't going to be any, like, hieroglyphics or anything, is it?
Yes, it's a translation. I have Richard Kind here. Richard, would you come in and
Jackal? I have Horus.
So this movie came out in 1994. Stars Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell has one other screen credit in 1994. Do you guys know what that is?
No idea.
Well, he was the uncredited voice of Elvis in Forrest Gump.
Right.
What? Yeah, oh, yeah, because young Elvis shows up to Forrest's house where he stays with his mom.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I don't remember.
And he teaches him how to dance or something?
Yeah, exactly. The music, I'd say, like, the real legacy of this movie, other than the TV shows, is the music, because that music was constantly used in other trailers. The composer was a guy named David Arnold, who had only ever done one other feature film. He'd done some other, like, student films, and he did something with Bjork, but he wasn't, like, a big composer at the time. In fact, at the time he was hired to do the score for Stargate, he had just applied for a job at a video store.
Oh, wow.
He
could have been renting out Stargate.
Right. Oh, man, can you imagine if he, yeah, if he hadn't gotten the gig and had to, like, yeah, rent out VHS copies of Stargate for, like, a year afterwards? But, you know, I have no way of really fact-checking your answers here, but I wondered if you guys could think of any other trailers that feature the Stargate music. I have a few of them written down here. I can't even
name the music. It doesn't remember that. It's not that memorable to me.
I think I only remember it from the TV show, because they use the same music, obviously, for the TV show. Yeah, I'm going to say Stuart Little.
No, not Stuart Little.
You can't. Did you fact check that?
Well, I've gotten some written down here. It said it was used in the trailers for movies like Deep Rising, Independence Day, Jumanji, The Mummy, Polar Express, Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow, Waterworld, and Drag Me to Hell, which I don't remember, but...
Wow.
Sure. And last question I have for you. So I'm not going to do a deep dive into the TV shows because I really don't have the time.
Who does?
I rattled off facts about like 18 different Beethoven movies a few weeks ago, but I am not going to figure out what happened in all of these Stargate shows. But I did want to ask you guys if you know which future Justice League star appeared in the show Stargate Atlantis, because they brought in a whole thing about Atlantis into it.
Which future Justice League? Okay, which one is the Justice League?
It's the one with Batman and Wonder Woman.
Okay.
Zack Snyder made it.
I'm going to say Jason Momoa, because he gets underwater a lot.
It is Jason Momoa.
All right.
He played Ronan Dex on Stargate Atlantis.
Oh, wow.
And actually, I'm looking at the IMDb for Stargate Atlantis right now, and it looks like Richard Kind shows up in
That's nice. Give him some work. Yeah, that's right. I saw that he was in that show. Yeah.
Is he the same guy?
I don't think so.
Okay.
We never find out what happens to him. Presumably, he has a good life.
Yeah, I guess. Again, I would have loved it if this movie was about him. So, yeah, there's some interesting stories about the making of this movie. Yeah, one was the casting of Jay Davidson, who, like I said, wasn't in a lot of movies. Like, he was basically just plucked out of obscurity for The Crying Game. He was at an after party for a Derek Jarman movie and was approached to audition for the movie. Got it. Didn't even really seem to want to do the movie from what I've read, or like be part of the entertainment industry. Like, he was working in fashion and later became a model, but yeah, it's fun looking at like old interviews with him. It's funny because like no one seems to understand that he wouldn't want to be a movie star. Like all the interviews is like, what are you doing next? He's like, I don't know if I want to do something. And weirdly, like pre Stargate, you know, in a few interviews, he bragged about not having an agent and said like he doesn't want an agent because he doesn't want to
do Stargate,
end up doing a bad movie because they offer him a bunch of money. And that's basically what happened. Like, they offered him $1 million. Or the story goes that he asked for $1 million because he thought there was no way they would say yes, and they did say yes, so he ended up doing it.
He'd just been nominated for an Oscar. You can't demand $1 million when you've been nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah,
man, the way Hollywood kind of just chewed that movie out. Just, they made so many jokes about the ending of that movie, like,
oh, crying, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it exists in the culture, really.
Though they also said like he was really into like the costumes in the film, like when he saw what they were doing and saw the costumes, because he worked in fashion. Mm-hmm. They did have to like adjust the costumes. Like, you'll notice like a lot of them, like the costumes come up like just above the nipple, and that's because he didn't want to take his nipple rings out because he said he just got them and thought that they like the openings would seal up if he
Ra can't have nipple rings?
Yeah, right?
Make them out of like an Ouroboros or something, you know.
You know, I just find him like a very curious figure. And especially because like, yeah, I totally like, imagine if like you or I or just anyone that you know was just randomly like thrust into such a spotlight, like, mm-hmm. and didn't even have like the intention or the desire to be an actor. And yeah, like you can find that very unappealing. So I think it's very strange that he's in this movie. And I haven't seen The Crying Game since like not long after it came out, but like I remember him being really good in that movie. But it was like you said, like you remember the conversations around that movie at the time more than the movie itself.
I haven't even seen it. I've just seen like, yeah, like the parodies and, you know, the problematic jokes and, you know, the reputation, really, to be honest.
Right. There are also some stories about, like, I guess he didn't, this isn't really funny, but he didn't have a very good time making the movie because he was, like, this isn't the funny part, but he was coming off heroin.
Oh, geez.
And his personal assistant, he had a personal assistant who was the bass player from Frankie Goes to Hollywood. And it said, on the second day of shooting, he disappeared with Jay's phone, all of his petty cash, and his methadone. I said, first he was hysterical, then it got really bad. I could write a book about it. That's what Roland Emmerich said. So,
isn't the Will Ferrell yeah. character in Zoolander from Frankie Goes to Hollywood?
I don't remember. So, yeah, really, I mean, I will say, like, casting him in that role is one of the things that makes this movie actually memorable.
For sure. Yeah.
Though, like we said, there are some, like,
weird and problematic.
Yeah, it's problematic in the sense that, like, yeah, they probably were seeking, like, an androgynous character to further the disassociation from,
yeah,
from our
well, and there's also
French Stewart.
Yeah, there's also, like, that weird thing about, like, the children, you know? And, like, this movie has, like, yeah. a theme of, like, you know, exploiting children to it, and they sort of like put that as like, you know, oh, of course these cultural others are okay, this is what they do, they exploit children, and that's why he has this like weird harem of almost naked kids.
That was unpleasant and yeah, bad. But I will say, just purely from a performance standpoint, I mean, he's
absolutely
speaking in ancient Egyptian and they put stuff on it, but like he certainly had a screen presence, and that, you know, is part of the reason why he was nominated for an Oscar not long before that.
Absolutely.
And I think it does make the movie stand out. This movie was sued.
Whoa.
You guys
by
hear about
Egypt?
This? No.
You can't just say that we didn't that build the pyramids, one. Assholes.
It was sued by a guy named Omar Zoudi.
Oh.
I think that's how you pronounce it, who is a high school teacher who had written a similar movie treatment and submitted it to one of the studios, I guess, in 1984. Mm. But he thought it was similar enough to sue for, and it was enough to warrant a trial, though it was settled out of court for, I think he sued for like the gross of the movie. Like he sued for like $195 Whoa. Million dollars or something, but it was settled for just $50,000. Mm. So I don't know exactly what happened, but he did not too long ago publish his version of the story as a book.
Oh, nice. I should read that since by. I've read the...
I can't believe you read it. I cannot believe you read it.
I can.
Book. What is wrong with you?
I'm literate? Or is that just because of colonialism? Maybe it is. I don't know.
No, you're wasting your literacy.
Yeah. I should read like Edward Said or something.
Yes.
Okay. Rob, you know Blaine and I don't let you read.
No,
you want to keep him underdeveloped.
Yeah, we don't even want you to like draw things in the sand.
I'm just here to make these podcasts and edit them together.
The book, if anyone's interested, is called Egyptscape.
Hmm.
Egyptscape.
Okay. Not a great title. Stargate's pretty good.
Like I mentioned, there were action figures for this movie. Mm-hmm. you know, yeah, I imagine a lot of kids reuse the James Spader one if they ever wanted to play erotic 90s thriller with their friends.
Get one of my Transformers, you know?
There were, like we said, a whole bunch of TV shows, live action, and an animated series, which I don't remember happening.
Stargate
but...
Babies.
Right.
I mean, if there's anything that this movie proves is that, like, the goal of Hollywood execs is to create a franchise because you can... you don't have to worry about, you know, like a new, like you, if you can create a fan base, then they'll just, you know, this is something that you kind of enlightened me to, JM, in terms of when you talk about like, oh, you know, we hated The Rise of Skywalker or whatever. Like a lot of people liked it. Like, that's fine. Like it's a lot of people liked it and they didn't go on the internet to talk about how much they liked it. And so it's, you know, there's always a market for these things. And this movie is proof that there's always a market.
Some hardcore
for whatever
Stargate
movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There. This movie was a big hit. But like I said, it was a big hit, but they never made a sequel. Because I think it was like the experience I had. Like everyone went to the movies and had a good time going to the movies. And then, you know, no one thought about it again. And
Roland Emmerich doesn't seem to be like a sequel guy, though. Does he make sequels?
Well, they made the Independence Day one, and that
but
did not
like
go well.
But that's like the reboot, right? Yeah.
It was a sequel. It was, like, it was Judd Hirsch was in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's true.
For crying
yeah,
out loud.
It was a sequel, yeah. But it was like...
But, you know, I think the problem with this movie, and it's the problem with a lot of the other movies, is, like, his leads are just bad. Like, for, you know, we've talked a lot about how offensive this movie is to, like, the supporting cast of cartoon characters. But, like, the lead characters are also terribly drawn. Like, there's even, you know, I think a lot of this movie, it was so short, such a short time span, but, like, it seems patterned off of Jurassic Park in a lot of ways, but like Jurassic Park made everybody have differing viewpoints, but still be smart.
Right.
And this movie even takes its smartest or its seemingly smartest characters and makes them dumb for no reason other than maybe someone will chuckle. Like there's that scene where like, oh, you know, this is another, you know, hallmark of, kind of, gross colonialist fantasy movies, but like the scene where they're eating the gross food and it's like the lizard creature that they have to eat or else they'll insult their hosts. Mm-hmm. And James Spader eats it and then says, oh, it tastes like chicken. And then he starts like doing an impression of a chicken.
Oh, that was the worst shit in the world.
But it's also like, why? And everyone just looks at him like he's an idiot. But it's also like, well, don't make, if he's supposed to be the smartest guy, don't make him into like the idiot for this scene. Like it. So just, I think like, yeah, that's part of your problem. No one wants to see these people ever again for the rest of their lives.
We're just glad that James Spader stayed on that planet.
Right. James Spader has since publicly said that he only did this movie for the money.
He said that about every other movie he's done as well.
Probably. Kurt Russell refused to do it, said he hated the script, and then they found out they sent him like an earlier draft, and they sent him a later draft, and he was like, oh, it's not that bad. So he agreed to do it. And at one point, apparently, according to Dean Devlin, there was a scene where James Spader was refusing to come out of his trailer until they rewrote the scene to make it better. And Kurt Russell came in and said, come on, you got to, you know, was trying to get him out. And James Spader said, come on, admit it. The dialogue's horrible. And Kurt Russell said, of course it's horrible. That's why they pay you $1 million. If it was brilliant, you'd do it for free.
That's a great line.
Yeah. So everyone kind of knew this was garbage while they were making it. But speaking to that, like, you know, problematic conspiracy theory about, like, the pyramids being created by aliens. And am I the only one on this podcast who has been in the pyramids?
Yes.
Whoa. Well,
it smelled like BO in there. a lot of that was the tourists, but I did not get a distinct alien vibe from the pyramids.
Maybe that's what they smell like. Maybe they don't have pit stick in.
But it was like, it was like, I mean, they just like herd the tourists in like through these like very tiny, like, shafts. It was insanely claustrophobic and uncomfortable, and I can't imagine anyone actually going there and getting any kind of like majesty.
Yeah, dude, it's a tomb. You're not supposed to hang out.
And it's across the street from, like, I think it's a KFC. Like, it is, yeah, the majesty of the pyramids has been somewhat marred by modernity. but that theory, the I don't know if this is the origin point for that conspiracy theory, but certainly one of the big ones, and the way the filmmakers of this film were exposed to it, was the book Chariots of the Gods. You know that, Cena, that book?
Yeah. I've heard of it.
And the book Chariots of the Gods was like a bestseller and made into a movie in the 70s. And for some reason, the book was by Eric von Daniken, I think. And for some reason, when Roland Emmerich was in film school in Germany, they showed him the movie of Chariots of the Gods in film school.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
It made a big impression on him.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And in case you're wondering, it was the book Chariots of the Gods just the ravings of a racist madman? Well, the same guy, von Daniken, wrote a sequel book in 1979. And some of the questions he asked in that book include, was the black race a failure?
Oh, God.
Did the extraterrestrials change the genetic code by gene surgery and then program a white or yellow race?
Oh, God.
He also...
So that's the thing. Like, it's just all this stuff becomes so very quickly sort of fought, like just a very slippery slope to like race science. And it's always, these guys love Egyptology for that.
Well, yeah. And last one, I don't know how this came up, but apparently he says in the book, quote, nearly all Negroes are musical. They have rhythm in their blood. That's a quote from his book. So that's where Stargate kind of owes its lineage to, or is just this kind of thinking.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, that's why these movies exist. They're like, they're dumb sort of vehicles, but they tap into deeper things. And it turns out that the Stargate sort of, you know, the force of this movie has propelled it like far beyond we could have ever imagined. I mean, it's also like there's no rhyme or reason to these things either, right? Like, I don't think there's a reason why the Stargate TV shows take off.
But like, it is like it is harmful. Like, it's still being like, you still get the fucking shows on like the History Channel or whatever being like, were the pyramids like created by aliens? Elon Musk tweeted it out apparently recently, saying that
it's like a meme. It's a meme now.
Aliens.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Sure.
It's just one of the like many. Yeah, this is one of the many ways that like, you know, settler culture kind of like insults indigenous anything. Like, it just cheapens and everything is rendered through the lens of the contemporary. And, you know, I mean, that's why you shoot the Sphinx. Like, that's why you do that, because your only idea in the world is I have to kill everything that I don't understand. And so you shoot this fucking stone statue, like whatever. Like, yeah, it's pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Well, it's also just it's a way of you know, rationalizing white supremacy when there's clear, you know, concrete evidence to the contrary. And all, you know, it's all of the, it's not just the pyramids. Like, there's all kinds of like examples of like, non-European, you know, wonders of construction that suddenly became evidence of ancient alien interference. It's awful and garbage. And it's what formed the basis of this movie, which is also, in my opinion,
wow.
So maybe we should wrap up on that note. I probably don't have to ask, but Cena, did you think this movie was rewatchable?
This movie is not watchable, let alone rewatchable. So bad. How did this stuff like form us? I mean, I know that what the point of this podcast is. Like, how did this stuff invade our brains so profoundly? And like, I don't know. It just, we were 10 years old or 11 years old when this movie came out. It had such like, it had, we, and our brains are so open at that age. You can't help but like, you know, imbibe the stuff and think, you know? And then we would get like a few years later from now, like 5 years later, we're going to get like Jar Jar Binks and the Gungans. And like, that's another encounter with the colonial sort of other. Yeah, man. Fucked up times.
I won't hear a word against Watto, though.
Yeah.
Top notch. Not to mention a movie that you made me watch with you after I'd already seen it. One of the most successful movies of all time, Avatar.
That's true. It's the same story. Yeah, same story. Colonial encounter.
Wow.
Yeah, overlaid with that VR stuff. Yeah.
What about you, Rob? Was it rereadable?
You know, I enjoyed seeing these scenes, which I had imagined so vividly brought to life on the cinema screen. But no. It just doesn't. It's not good. It's not good, and there's a lot of badness in it as well. So that's troubling. Yeah, it's just really bad. I mean, it's really bad. It's and for all the reasons that we talked about. And as a movie, you know, the science fiction stuff, I like the science fiction stuff. You know, that can tie me over for a bit. Like any of that, like wormhole-y, like travel to another, you know, dimension sort of thing. I like that sort of thing. You know, any of that Star Trek-y stuff, I'm on board for that. But yeah, I mean, it's just so like baldly a colonialist fantasy. It's bad from there. Yeah, I'm not gonna watch this one again. I don't know. I am kind of curious about the TV show. I might try to watch the TV show and
dive
see if
in,
there's
man.
Anything up there. Yeah, because you know there's 10 years of that, so I can watch that in like a month. So we'll see. But no, not rewatchable.
Yeah, I agree. I hated this movie so much. And it's also, like, on top of everything we've talked about, like, it's racist nonsense derived from a hateful garbage person's theory. And on top of that, like, on top of everything, it's also just boring. Like, it's not...
Yeah, it's incredibly boring. Mm-hmm. Like, incredibly boring.
Think about, like, it does have, like, a, you know, putting aside some of our grievances with, like, the representation of it, like, it does have a good setup. We have this kind of ancient artifact. It's a portal to somewhere, and we don't know where it goes, but we're going to journey into it and find out where it takes us. And that's an intriguing setup. And to have the answer to that question be like, yeah, just a town in a desert that kind of looks like an ancient town from Earth. It's just so boring. It's boring. Yeah. It's stupid. It's
but they have a weird horse.
Awful. They do have a weird horse.
Yeah, that never ending story looking weird thing. That was awful.
Yeah. Ugh. I was not a fan of Stargate, and I'm sorry if you are a big fan of Stargate and have been listening to the end of this podcast, but yeah. Well, thank you, Sina, for joining us. And
thank you guys for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, you too, man. And as always, you can find us at rewatchability.com, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to podcasts, really. Twitter, we're at rewatchability, facebook.com/rewatchability. And until next time, what was that famous quote from Stargate?
Say a little King Tut for me.
<That's> so stupid.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.